everybody. It is Katie Kestner. I am the primary host of the Dear Katie podcast, and we are so delighted to have you take this journey with us on our weekly podcast episodes. I just want to remind everyone to do great self-care. Thriving is part of the purpose of this podcast, and we definitely want you to take a break at any time, warm bath, fresh air, walk a dog, have a bite of chocolate, whatever you need to do good care for yourself. Just as a reintroduction, if you're not familiar with me, I am the woman who was on the cover of Time magazine at age 18 as the first in history to speak out nationally and publicly as the victim of date rape. And HBO made a film about me, and I went on to become the executive director of the Take Back the Night Foundation. We are the oldest, largest global movement on sexual violence in all forms for all people in the world. So we encourage you to visit our website for lots more information. So I'm going to turn it over to our host and our guest for today. Welcome back to the Dear Katie podcast. This is Katie Kestner.
And this is Claire Kaplan. Before we get started, I want to remind our listeners that sometimes we have difficult discussions in our podcast, things that are hard to hear, especially for survivors of trauma. So we encourage all of you to care for your safety and your well-being. Please reach out for emotional support with your family or friends or a counselor if you have one, or even a hotline. Additional resources can be found on our Take Back the Night Foundation website, and I'll give you that address at the end of the podcast.
Thank you so much, Claire. And we are so delighted to welcome Juliet Caroline Karaman to the podcast. Juliet has had quite an amazing life story. I believe Juliet's coming to us from the UK. So Juliet, let's hear a little bit about your background and bio.
Thank you. Yes, I do live in the UK. I am Dutch by origin. I've been here for about 24 years now. I have survived trauma, a lot of sexual trauma, a lot of other trauma as well. And I help other women and couples really overcome a lot of sexual trauma. I help parents of kids that have committed suicide to really find their way back in life again, that there is life after this all.
Amazing work. It sounds very powerful, Juliet. And, you know, we always start out with what is the experience that brings you as a survivor to your microphone? Or the lifelong experiences.
Right. So today is a bit of a special day. I got called this morning by my sister-in-law from South Africa to say that my brother has passed away. And I had to do a lot of embodiment work. My brother is also the first person who sexually abused me for years. And although we had a relationship, because I kept pulling him back into the family, the last few years after my sister and my father passed away and then my mother passed away, I had to put in some really strong boundaries with him so that he couldn't pull me in with some of the negativity that he had. And at this moment, I actually have so much love for this man. It's like he just led a life that he had difficulties, right? He just couldn't see past his own stuff. And if this hadn't happened to me, and I don't let trauma define me, right? It's something that happened to us, but it doesn't define us. Then would I have been the woman that I am today? Would I have helped as many people as I helped today? I don't know. It's a question to have. So in a way, I can't say that I'm grateful for it, but there's oh, okay. So I see how the universe, God, whatever, had this kind of mission. My soul had a mission to come to this world and actually help people with this. And these were the tasks that have been put on my path. Sounds a bit woo-woo, doesn't it? But
not entirely. It's not entirely. It just sort of indicative that you have done such incredible work for healing that you've found a way of defining these experiences and, just putting a different spin on them. It's the same experience, but it's just how you how you see or understand them, really. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's definitely. And it's also, yeah, I've done so much work, not so much on my brother, but yes, I have also, but really on the date rape, which happened later in life, when I was around 18, and just seeing what, you know, how can I forgive? How can I really actually see how that made me into the person that I am now? So yes, a lot of work, a lot of healing, and also a lot of joy that you can have in life while you go through this.
Well, I would love to talk some about that joy. But before we get to that, I'm curious to know, when your sister-in-law called you this morning, what was your first reaction when she told you the news?
Well, he had texted me at Christmas saying he's got cancer. And thought only 6 months to live. We'd WhatsApped a little bit. He'd been taking some CBD oil, so that actually apparently had helped a lot. The markers came down a lot. And then all of a sudden this week he got really ill, very painful, and just left. I have never spoken about this publicly. His wife and his children don't know what happened. My kids don't know.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Julia, that's huge. Today is such an important day. I mean, it's almost like perfect timing in a terrible, twisted, you know, divine way. Yeah, let's talk about how it feels right now to you to unleash this secret.
All I can do is breathe at the moment. It's actually just allow myself to breathe through it. Mm-hmm. The funny thing is I had a photo shoot planned as well. Met this woman on a summit on Friday, and she came up to me. She's like, I have to take your pictures. And I'm like, okay. She's going back to Sweden tomorrow. I'm like, well, Sunday maybe. So she was meant to come to the house today. And this morning, my whole body was like, no, don't do it. And then my soul was like, yes, actually allow yourself to be captured in your pure grief, your rage, your anger, your pain, your everything. Because, you know, this morning I was shaking. I was moving it through my body. I was crying. There was, felt like my soul was being pulled out. And all of this is actually to feel, to really allow myself to feel every single facet of it, because there's beauty in it and there's a lot of pain in it as well. But once you can move through it, then there is that ability to choose. Then I don't get pulled towards like, oh my God, he was a terrible guy, I never want to hear about him anymore, or I love him so much and I'll forgive everything. But then you can just get to a place of neutrality, of a place there's no interference anymore, there's no charge.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like there's still more to unpack? I mean, this is the day one. How do you envision the journey going?
It's interesting, right? Because I've unpacked this the last few years already a little bit, and I've had much more boundaries since, especially since my mother passed away. And there's always more to unpack, isn't there? Always on every journey.
That's true, yes.
So we're like an onion, right? It's like another layer comes up. So I'm not afraid to unpack more of it. And I just know that things will come up and I will all of a sudden be in the middle of teaching or something and my eyes will start running and tears will come out and snot will start flying. And that is a way to be really real and to be really authentic. And this is how I want to teach and how I want to bring my gift forth. So.
How have you found doing the work you're doing with trauma and is it therapeutic itself, the work that you've chosen to do, Juliet?
It's very therapeutic. So I do, it's not only trauma, it's also people, it started with relationships, right? People didn't have sex and they'd come to me and they'd learn about it. And then they'd learn that it actually started with communication and that very often it started with there had been some kind of trauma, either between the two of them or in one of their backgrounds. And that's when you start learning, you know, they started learning how to hold space for each other. And then that kind of developed into quite intense people seeking me out because they knew I could hold it and I'd helped people pass over. I've had two clients that also I've helped pass over. And somehow that word just gets around because, I don't know, whatever, it does. And it's massively therapeutic. But I've also realized that at one point, there was a lot of interdependence that started happening. There was a lot of codependence from my clients on me. So I had to kind of like really learn how to make some boundaries. And it's like, no, these are my times. And yes, I'm there for you all the time. But on a Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, it's also my time because, you know, otherwise you start giving too much of yourself as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting challenge for people who are providing therapeutic or other kinds of services to people who are struggling. You know, it doesn't have to be trauma per se, but how do you, because we're sort of giving types, right? So how do you preserve yourself? How do you keep yourself whole while also giving to someone else? I mean, those who are unable to do that, that's burnout, right? That's how people get crash and burn. And being able to set those boundaries, especially for people who are traumatized, sometimes can seem like a rejection. And instead of just, no, this is how I can, this is what I have to do to take care of myself so then I can help you. Otherwise, I won't be able to. I think that that's sometimes hard for people to understand. Have you found that to be the case? Or
I think it's harder for people to understand if you haven't been very clear from the beginning.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
And I'll be honest, like you know, I can be very giving and some of my clients have been friends, right? And then if you get called on a Sunday morning, of course you're going to take it. But yeah, it also then meant that I started getting tired. And then when I said, hey, listen, you know, I love speaking to you and I want to help you with everything. And can it wait until Monday? And at first it's like, oh, but it's also, it's like with my kids, when I first started my whole personal development journey, it was like, oh, mommy, you're so selfish and you're taking time for yourself. And what is this? Because they were so used to me overgiving. And I'm sure we have lots of listeners here that are going to be like, yep. Yeah. I'm an overgiver or I'm a, you know, a recovering overgiver.
Right.
But once you then start taking time for yourself, that is the bit that you do have to just go through. And people will say, hey, you're a little bit selfish. And it's like, really? What about, you know, this empty glass that I have and I'm going to try and water the plants with it? There's no water in it. So how's that going to work?
That's a good analogy.
Juliet, I want to go back to, you know, obviously your sexual abuse started at a very young age. Mm. And how do you think it impacted your growing up and understanding your own sexuality? And were there times when you were disinterested in sex? Was it, you know, something you had to overcome? Did you become like, I think sex is a performative kind of, you know, emotionless act, you know, what, how did that affect your understanding and relationship with your own body and sexuality?
It's interesting, right? Because sexuality is really where I started coaching people on. So yes, started early and then I had a rape, a multi-rape when I was 18 with five guys. And it didn't shut down my sexuality, but it definitely switched it up a little bit. And it was more difficult to ask for what I wanted. I also had a problem with weight and I ballooned to like twice my size. And yeah, I had massive boobs when I was 16. And they're like as big as my head. And I just remember people would always look at that and I'd start rounding my shoulders so not to be so visible. So there was definitely, I wanted to not be seen, and it was just easier to put on weight, to emotionally eat your way out of it or through it, and then also to not be as noticeable, which is what a lot of people who have been sexually abused, what happens. And also a lot of people who are just a very bright light, who are just, you know, shining, they have a big light, then they just kind of like, oop, it's gotten dimmed a little bit, and they're going to continue to dim it. So I hadn't remembered my rapes for a long time until I actually physically was in a class and I got flogged, and then I re-remembered.
What do you mean flogged?
Yeah, that's a British term, isn't it?
Flogging with a flogger. So BDSM class. And that's where, when you have like not a whip, but a flogger, it's with tails. So that's when I got flogged in between my shoulder blades. And I actually viscerally had an experience of my body about to pop, like a balloon, you know, it was going bigger, 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 and it was just about to pop. So I asked the people that were running the workshop, I said, can you come and you know, help hold me? And my body started shaking just like an animal, and to move the trauma through. So at that point, I realized, it's like, oh, in order to move through this, I need to duplicate it. So I went back to London. I hired a dom and five guys, and I recreated the experience, but I gave it a different ending. Now, this is hardcore, not for everyone to do.
Really? That's intense, yeah.
So, didn't realize it, but it's like the same thing. It's like if I was afraid of heights, I'd go jump out of an airplane. So it's just like I knew that to do it, I would overcome my fear. So this was the same thing with my sexual trauma. This was, of course, after I had been married and after I'd gotten divorced. So four kids in 3 years' time. Sex was okay, but there was definitely a time when I was like, I don't want this. And it felt performative. And it was only until I actually remembered the rape that it all started to slot into place.
That's so, what a journey. But Juliet, one thing I'm realizing is you are so very in touch with your mind-body connection. You know, it's something you must, you know, from the moment we started the conversation, you were sitting physically and mentally with the whole experience. You know, how does that feel? I don't know that everyone has that same connection that you have. How would you describe it?
I certainly didn't have that. It took me 9 months in hospital. I fainted and I spent 9 months in hospital, and it was like my body was like telling me to stop. I divorced my husband, went and was with a man who had three children. We set up a house with seven children, eight bedrooms, seven different schools, giving, 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 giving. And just, you know, I was the annoying one saying, I know what you need, instead of actually really feeling into what I needed. So yes, overgiver completely, and not always probably listening to what others needed. So my body also just said, hey, stop. So I fainted, and I kept fainting for 9 months. So it took to get to that part for me to really start to listen. And in the beginning, it was really tough. It would be like, so what are you feeling inside now? I'm like, I don't know, I'm a bit numb. I'm like, great, that's a feeling. What does numbness feel like? I'm like, there's like a devoid of temperature. There's a devoid of, there's a bit of temperature, but there's very little movement. And if you can start to break it down like that, like just to look at one part of your body, it's like, focus on your middle finger. What's the sensation if you put your thumb next to your middle finger? And if you can slowly touch each other's fingers, Can you feel the ridges? Can you feel the warmth of your thumb on your middle finger? Is there a vibration? Is it static? Is it moving? And all this, all of a sudden, I started getting vocabulary for that. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. So instead of someone saying, how are you doing? I'm like, well, I've got this tightness in my throat and it feels a bit metallic. And they kind of look at me and say, like, oh, thank you. But it was really interesting. It's not what they're expecting, but once you start being that in touch with your body, you also, you know when to say no to sex and you know when to say yes.
How do you feel your current, you, I think you remarried, right? Or you have a partner now?
I'm engaged, yes.
Engaged. And how has he been helpful or part of the ongoing relationship building with your sexual self and, you know, that, like, I'm just saying, like, what is he doing great? So we can all find a partner like yours.
You know what? I mean, I'm also an erotic blueprint coach. So this is like the love, the language of pleasure, right? Like the love languages, these are the five languages of how you get into pleasure. So he and I connected and we're both shapeshifters. So that means that we like everything, but we've always been with partners that only liked one certain way of pleasure. So that meant that we're both starving. So when we got together, it was like, whoa, this is incredible. He has also been extremely sensitive because he noticed when he would stand behind me that I would tense up and he'd like touch me by my hair, my neck, and I'd tense up. And he's like, for him, that's a rejection. And I would notice, I'm like, hey, Alex, stay. I'm having a flashback next to the moment that my uncle used to do this. So just stay there. My body is actually just responding to the you know, thinking that it's in a physical threat. I know that I'm not. And let me just move it through there. And he's like, okay, what do you want me to do? I'm like, I want you just to stay there. Let me just get used to it. Let me move through this. It's a trigger that I'm going through and I'm actually just noticing it. I'm allowing my body to shake a little bit. I'm thinking the thought like, oh, it feels like uncle, whatever. What's the image? It's like, I see actually the guy holding me. It's like, what's the emotion? It's like, oh, there's fear. And what's the body sensation? There's tightness. Great. Mm. So those four elements, that's how you actually get out of the monkey mind. And it's like, oh, okay, great. So I've moved through that. What's available to me now? It's like, oh, the sensation is much less. There's not so much of a contraction. The emotion is no longer fear, but it's like, I'm pretty relaxed. The thought, it's like, oh, that's not happening now. And the image is like, it's just him standing behind me. And that's what I mean with duplication, when we really allow ourselves to go back to those four elements, because any experience has those four elements in it, if you really break it down.
I think that's so helpful, Juliet. Let's just go over them again for the listeners, because I think they've heard
the same thing.
Let's do it again. The four.
Completely.
Yeah.
Yes. So I want everyone just to think back. Let's think back to a happy experience, okay? So let's think back to a happy experience. And then what's the image that you see? You can say it out loud. If you're listening yourself, you can just think it. What's the thought you're having in that moment? What's the body sensation? So is there tightness? Is there expansion? Is there buzzing? And then what's the emotion? So is there fear? Is there excitement? Are you happy? And oftentimes you'll even have like, if it's something happy, you'll start having a smile on your face. Now take a deep breath in and out. And now what's coming up? Is there another image that's coming up? Another thought, another body sensation, and another emotion? And if you do this 2 or 3 times a day for about 90 seconds, you can actually just be really present with what is and be in the moment here and now and not future project about what's going to happen and doomsday scenarios, or think back to the past where everything was terrible or good or whatever. But actually, it's like, oh, what's happening in me right now?
Mm-hmm. I think it's really powerful. Here's my next question, Juliet, though. Those are experiential. And then the interpretation, though, you know, I just did a podcast with, we talked a lot about guilt, mm-hmm. or fear, or, you know, like there's happiness and joy and freedom, but then there's also some who think I don't deserve that, or I feel guilty if I do self-care, or tell me how you would help someone who's saying, like, I'm not sure I'm entitled to this.
Mm-hmm. So I'm like, so I would say, perfect. So I want you to take a situation where you are not sure that you're entitled to self-care or to do this. What, tell me, on a scale of 1 to 10, how high do you rate that? And then usually I say, if it's in between, like, you know, a 5 and an 8, perfect. If it's at a 10, you know, we might need to do some other stuff to bring it down a little bit. But usually it's perfect. And I say, okay, so take a snapshot of that moment. What's happening? What's the thought? What's the image? What's the body sensation? And what's the emotion? And then to take a breath and then check in with the number. How big is it now? And there are lots of different ways that I take them through it, but those are the basic steps for it. And also the question is like, but what is that guilt giving you? Why are you, what is the guilt? What added thing is it giving to you in your life? You know, the guilt, sometimes you're like, but it's holding me back from doing stuff. Yes, but the guilt is also having you feel important, so that you're needed, that you're wanted. And if you would take that guilt away, who would you be?
Hmm. I like that idea, Juliet. I think it's pretty complicated and it takes a lot of time. A lot of deliberate effort. I think a lot of people don't feel they even have the moment to breathe in between the mayhem of either school or job or family chaos. Like, it's, I think it's lovely. I don't know. Claire, what are your thoughts for Juliet? In our last 10 minutes?
Yes. Well, I think that what you're describing is something that anybody can do. It's in a way, it's like you have to give yourself permission to do that.
Completely.
And to think, you know, for 2 minutes I can do this. It's not going to delay me that much. I mean, if there's a lot of chaos going on, maybe that's not the best moment. But the idea of, yes, I need to do these things. This is something I have to give to myself. And then it'll become kind of a habit, I would think, of doing that kind of thing, so that you can breathe when you need to. Because I know people tend to stop breathing when they're in a tense or emotional moment. So just even reminding oneself to breathe the way you're talking about that, that's, I think it'd be a great skill for our listeners to learn.
It's a simple thing. Mm-hmm. Anyone can do it when you go to the bathroom.
Right.
You take, you know, a minute longer in the bathroom, you take away some time away from your kids. And I know what it's like bringing up kids and a busy household and a busy life and a busy job. But, you know, we all know what burnout is like as well.
Mm-hmm. We do. Well, that's a really wonderful little gift you've given our listeners, I think. What do you think, Katie?
I do too. Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And I'm thinking in the last few minutes, you have such a lot to offer. And just, you know, for our listeners, Juliet has been through, you know, one, the major assault was the one she just referenced by 5 men. I believe that was in college, right, Juliet?
Yeah, it's when I was living in Spain.
And, you know, maybe just share, that's one more thing you've been through that our listeners don't know that much about. Maybe tell us a little bit about how that affected your life and what happened.
Okay, that was, I went to Spain to learn Spanish, and at the same time I was also teaching English to teenage boys, you know, in school there. And I had a boyfriend, and I had an American girlfriend there that she and I used to hang out quite a bit. And she and I were both seeing friends of each other. So we got invited to this party by the guys that we were seeing. We're like, okay, fine. We get there and it kind of gets out of hand. And all of a sudden, we're in this bedroom with five guys all over us, beating the crap out of us, basically. At one point, we escaped and we climb out of a window and we walk back to town. And this is outside of town. We never spoke about it.
My goodness.
Oh, wow.
We never spoke about it. We were both, I was 18. I think she was 19. We never spoke about it. We lost contact. And, you know, and the psyche is incredible, because when we're not able to deal with that yet, we bury it. And it's only until we're able to deal with it, then all of a sudden, that's when you can have a visceral experience like I did, right? It's like, whoa, all this stuff is flooding through, because you're allowing, you've started that self-help journey. And yeah, it was just really interesting, where there was so much, I wouldn't say it's guilt, but so much, you know, shame in a way. It's like, oh, I must have brought this on myself.
Yeah.
You know, these were actually men that we were both had been seeing for like about 2 months each. So it's not like they were strangers, right?
Right.
Yeah. And that's, unfortunately, the shame that you're talking about. I mean, it's the fact that you knew them was even more of a silencing factor, I would imagine, than if they'd been strangers.
And that's it. And this is, of course, in a time pre-mobile phones. So, you know, the next day I had the guy come by my house, and I just looked at him and said, fuck, you know, what? Why do you even try and come here? It's like, yeah, but, you know, it got out of hand. I'm like, it got out of hand. Have you looked at my face? Have you looked at my face? Do you have any idea what happened? You know, I mean, five guys raped us, both of us.
Right.
And he just kind of like, yeah. And I'm like, no.
Juliet, you know, in our last few minutes, one question that just came to mind, those men, where do you think they are now? I mean, have you ever thought about that? Like, do they ever look back ever and think maybe that was a horrible thing I did, and living with their own guilt?
You know what? I've actually done a lot of work on that. I've written letters to my my rapist. They've written letters back to me. So there's, yeah, there's definitely been some stuff there. And there's also a lot of stuff that you can do in the metaphysical that you can do yourself by writing letters and then burning them, right? Where you can actually say exactly all the stuff that it is, and then receiving a letter, say, you know, you write a letter from the point of view from your rapist to you. And that can have a lot of healing effects. So I would say that is definitely something to do. And I would love to just touch upon where that body, that trauma lives in the body. So a lot of shaking, TRE, tremor release exercises, anything which is cross body movement really helps move it out and through.
When you're working with clients, you're teaching those techniques that you just talked about.
Definitely. And I would also say, for a lot of people, even if you're listening to this already and you're starting to get a little bit triggered, take your right hand and put it under your left armpit, and then cross your left arm across your chest. And that's the heart hug. So you're actually giving your heart a hug. And that really helps settle your breathing, settles your heart rate down. Just any time during the day that you start feeling activated, just give yourself a heart hug.
Love that. Love that, Juliet. I mean, what a beautiful interview, and what a powerful day you have just had personally. And you're still in this powerful place that you can share all of this beatitude with us. And thinking about the moments of our life that end, and the people around us when they disappear forever. Yeah. And we can never talk to them, but you know, I feel like my heart and all the way through, you gave us joy and you gave us hope, Juliet, and you gave us techniques and strategies, and you are a wonderful, brilliant gift. And thank you for sharing all you did.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, what a privilege, and so happy to have you.
Thank you.
Yes, I agree.
Claire, would you like to close us? And Juliet, do you want to say any other words of beatitude?
I've loved this. And what I've done the last 3 months is actually come up with my own podcast, so where I also interview lots of guests. So if that ever feels aligned, there's lots of free stuff on there. It's called The Scrumptious Woman. And you can find us on all the platforms.
Love that title. So listeners, you know, check out Juliet's podcast for sure. And thank you, Juliet, for joining us, for sharing your story and your wisdom. It's been wonderful speaking with you. Thank you also to all the volunteers who make this podcast happen. There's so many. And thank you, listeners, who are here to share this Juliet's wisdom and to perhaps learn something new. Help us help other survivors by subscribing to this podcast. Share it far and wide on your social media with your friends. Help us spread the word. And follow us on our Facebook page and our Instagram page. If you need support but don't know where to find it, you can find resources at takebackthenight.org for the resource list and also how to reach our legal support hotline. And remember that self-care is essential to healing and to thriving.
Thank you so much, Claire. And again, Juliet, what a privilege to speak with you on such a powerful and poignant day in your life. For our listeners, please continue to do excellent self-care. Juliet just gave you 5 amazing things to do. Do make that space and place, and do not feel guilty for taking care of yourself. I mean, I mentioned that a lot today. So I hope, you know, it was just a thought that was coming up for me about how many of us feel guilty for taking time to heal and care. Right. So it is important. You know, it's been said a million times, even on the airplanes, you know, put the thing over your face first and then care for everyone else around you. And we have to do that. We have to commit to that to be our best selves. So please continue to follow the Dear Katie podcast, listen, join us, come to Take Back the Night events, do a wearable. We have some cool new buttons on the site. Something small is always something big when it comes to just a symbol of self-care and love. So thank you, everyone, and take care. Thank you again, everybody, for joining another episode of the Dear Katie podcast. I hope very much you found today's episode helpful, empowering, and a way to take another step in that long journey toward healing and supporting those we care about, learning about sexual violence prevention, and also survivor support. For those of you who don't know, again, the Take Back the Night website has tons of great resources, books, self-care options, cool merch. If you're feeling like you need a wearable, we have great t-shirts. Of course, we would love it if you follow along on our free newsletter with news and events going on around the country and even around the globe. And finally, don't forget to like us and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You'll find our entire community popping up here and there, and recaps of our podcast episodes as well. So together we shatter the silence, and together we end the violence. Take care.